Brian White versus the City of Markham.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
The first issue that needs to be decided in this case is whether it was clearly established in 1999 that it constituted a seizure for a police officer to forcibly eject someone from their home and tell them not to come back. In terms of determining in 1999 whether that was a clearly established seizure, of course, the district court judge found that it was a seizure under law which pre-existed 1999, but did find that it was not a clearly established seizure, and therefore gave the individual defendant qualified immunity. In fact, in 1999, there were several cases in both the United States Supreme Court and this court which any reasonable person looking at them would realize that for a police officer to throw someone out of their house constituted a seizure.
Well, and isn't that when the house is uninhabitable?
The uninhabitability is a complete red herring. That was not the reason that my clients were thrown out of their house. That was something that was made up afterwards. There was, certainly was construction going on, but as many of us know, the construction going on in the house doesn't mean that you have to move out of your house. Lots of people have their kitchens remodeled, their bathrooms remodeled, porches fixed. A lot of times it's exterior walls that are taken down
temporarily. We understand that. We've all gone through that.
Yeah. So,
but that doesn't mean that that's the same factual situation here.
Okay. But in fact, even if you deal with the reason given now, the uninhabitability, the defendants in this case didn't follow their own regulations. There, in fact, was a very detailed set of regulations as to what should happen if there was a claim of uninhabitability. And
well,
that
why do you say the house wasn't uninhabitable?
Well, that's the evidence from my client.
What?
That it was fine.
Well, that's his conclusion. But can you tell me why he says that?
Why?
His reasoning?
Because he was living there in a perfectly reasonable way, that he and his son were living in a portion of the house that there wasn't even any construction going on in, that there was construction going on in a different portion of the house. There was no allegation of any kind of public health problem, no allegation that either he or his son was in any danger from the condition of the house. So if the allegation was that the condition of the house was what justified this ejection from that house on just
that was one condition.
I'm sorry.
We have to assume that the officer shows up.
Yes.
He looks around, sees the place is a mess. You know, the walls and this and that, and it's a mess because of the construction and also because of whatever confrontation. So that's one situation he looks at.
Okay. And if, in fact, that is the situation that he observed, Markham's regulations set forth a very specific course that should be followed. And what should be followed is, first of all, the building inspector comes around. The building inspector, who's trained to deal with this, makes an inspection, determines if there is in fact a violation of the housing code, and then produces a written document setting forth those violations, then serves it.
Good. But the next thing is the owner asserts her ownership. He admits he doesn't own it and doesn't have a lease, and the owner wants him out.
Right.
Now, all what you say about getting the inspector in and all that is well and good. If the owner says, I don't want to move out, says, I'm just repairing my house, he says, well, it's not safe to live here, then you go through that. But the process we have here is the officer encounters what could be defined as a domestic squabble.
How on earth is it a domestic squabble? She
well, the aunt and the nephew, and it's her house, and she wants him out.
She doesn't live there. And there's no dispute about that. He knows she doesn't live there.
No, but that's not what Judge Mannion asked. He said if she owns the house and she wants him out, because he has no right to that.
Well, there is very well established law that the owner of the house can't just come in to someone who's living there, where their home, and say, time to leave, let's go, get out, now. No, there is a very specific...
What is this? Squatter's rights or something?
It's not squatter's rights in the slightest. It was his home.
But somebody can move into other people's property?
He had been there pursuant to a lease and then had continued living there.
The lease had expired.
And then if a lease expires, there's a very specific way that you go about getting someone out. It's not complicated. It doesn't take a lot of time. You bring a forcible entry and detainer action in state court. If you get that order of possession, you then have, not the police, but the sheriff, go ahead and do the eviction. So there's a very specific set of regulations. And they're put in force for very good reasons. The good reasons are that you then avoid this kind of situation here, where someone is thrown out of their home on 10 or 15 minutes' notice. You avoid this situation where you're taking someone's home away with no notice whatsoever and basically rendering them homeless. So there are those regulations. It's not complicated.
It isn't his home, so let's not...
It most certainly was his home. He had
lived there when he had that lease.
It continued... I beg to differ, because it continued to be his home. There are tens of thousands of people living in Chicago who don't have a written lease, who are there subject to...
That was my question. In terms of the regulations and the procedure that should have been followed, is there a distinction in the regulations between people who have a written lease and people who do not?
No.
Who have lived in... I mean, does the regulation apply differently?
No. There is no distinction whatsoever. In fact, the law is very clearly established in Illinois that the presence or absence of a written lease makes no difference whatsoever.
In terms of the process, let me ask you one other thing, because neither side cited this case, a Supreme Court case, Sobel versus Cook County, which was an appeal from the Seventh Circuit. And there, the sheriff's department threatened a tenant with arrest for trespassing while a landlord physically repossessed without a valid eviction order and towed away the mobile home. And in that case, the Supreme Court said that the tenant had certain possessory rights to the mobile home and that his rights were violated.
Yes.
So, I mean, doesn't that have some relevance to our situation here?
Oh, I think it does. Judge, I think I did cite it. In fact, I
just missed it.
I was the attorney who represented Mr. Soldo, so I would not be unaware of that case. I think it does have some relevance here. It raises it. That did raise a slightly different issue, because that had to do with seizure of the mobile home rather than seizure of the person. But I think it is very relevant in this situation. Makes it clear that Fourth Amendment protections apply in a civil context. So if there is an attempted eviction, certainly the Fourth Amendment applies. And this court, in its opinion, was very clear on that. And that was a portion of this court's opinion which the U.S. Supreme Court approved and cited with approval in its opinion. So there is no question that does provide support for the argument in this situation.
Well, you first of all, you, in order to have the constitutional deprivation, it has to be a seizure.
Correct.
And I think that's the preliminary issue there that we're going to have to determine whether or not this is a seizure.
And what I set forth in my brief is both several cases which are factually which factually indicate that this is a seizure. Those are the Jerez case, the Bostick, Pennsylvania against Mims, where ordering a car driver out of his car is a seizure. Maryland against Wilson, where ordering a passenger who's not even suspected of any wrongdoing out of the car is analyzed as a seizure. If you look at those cases, those factual situations, and then compare it to ordering someone out of their home where they were still living, I think it's clear that a seizure existed. If you look at the principles which are underlying those cases and apply them to the factual situation in this case, it's also clear that if you ask the questions about what constitutes a seizure, in every single case, from Terry, Graham, Chestnut, Bostick, Kurnatch, you'll come up with the answer that this is a clearly established seizure and was a clearly established seizure in 1999. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Morning, Your Honor. Yes, please, court. If you ask a police officer to identify his or her least favorite situation to respond to, I think other than perhaps the typical traffic stop, and there's nothing typical about a traffic stop, it's the domestic situation. An officer is walking into a situation where he's called to assist one person and suddenly somebody else is jumping on his back. It's our position that the exigencies of the circumstances of this case justified the officer's actions and that the officer's actions were reasonable, or that in view of existing case law, the officer's decisions and actions were not so far off the mark that what the officer was doing was clearly unconstitutional. Saucier indicates that this court first has to address whether or not a constitutional right was infringed and then address the issues of qualified immunity. What Saucier also establishes is...
What are the facts that you say that authorize him to it?
He was called to a situation, and when he arrives at the situation, there is a heated argument. Mrs. Whittier is screaming and yelling. The officer comes to a situation where, admittedly, lamps have been knocked off the table. The plaintiff's belongings have been strewed around. A fish tank is broken on the wall. It's clearly an argument going on. And the officer is called to a situation, and what does he have to do? He has to defuse the situation. And were his actions... in this case, in selecting the course of action that he decided on, were they so far afield, keeping in mind that reasonableness is a range, were they so far afield that any police officer would have known that he ran afoul of the Constitution in doing what he did? The condition of the building was certainly a factor that entered the officer's mind. Drywall is put on walls for a reason, to prevent the spread of fire. Holes were in the ceiling, which could propagate fire. Holes were in the wall between a living room or kitchen and what was the garage. I mean, this clearly could potentially have been a hazardous situation, a fire trap. The officer decides that he wants to defuse this situation. So what does he do? He elects to say, I want this person who I'm told at least has a lesser possessory interest in it than the young lady. I take that factor into consideration. I take the fact into consideration. I'm looking around at the place and seeing what the place looks like. I'm looking that I have a situation that I can't just walk away from. If I walk away from it, the argument, for all I know, it's going to continue, and I'm going to be back again. And I'm going to be back again in a situation where somebody may be hurt. So the exigencies of the situation, I believe, justified his conduct.
What was wrong with waiting an hour or for a period of time for a building inspector?
That could have been a reasonable way to handle the situation, but the officer's got to sit and basically babysit the entire time. The issues of whether or not we violated or may not have complied with our ordinances in making the decision to arrest is not an issue in the case. Failing to comply with local law, failing to comply with regulations, the Gordon versus Dengelman authorities, for example, hold that the fact that we may not follow our proper or state procedures in making an arrest does not make the arrest unconstitutional.
Well, why is it the policy to allow the owner to remain if the dispute is with the tenant? Doesn't this mean every time there's a family, landlord, tenant type dispute that the tenant has to go?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. And really, the issue of whether or not there was a policy in place is not an issue in this case. The plaintiff has not raised the issue of policy in either the opening memorandum or reply memorandum, and has not challenged Judge Vagel's ruling with respect to city liability. We are here only on the issue of the police officer liability.
But if we approve this practice, if we approve this and say it was reasonable and there was no violation, then this kind of scenario could develop, couldn't it?
Well, certainly it could, but I think we have to look at this case and say, was our decision, if you're asking would that policy be unconstitutional, I think we have to look at would that policy be irrational, because we're not implicating any fundamental rights or anything like that, so the issue would be rational. And I would suggest that in this situation, if you want to say if that was our policy, was the officer's decision irrational to say under these circumstances, with there being no written lease, with the landlord wanting the person out, with the condition of the building, with the fighting going on, is what he did irrational or unreasonable in the Fourth Amendment context? There is no case law which holds that a seizure occurred under the circumstances of this case. I believe, as Your Honor noted in the Spiegel versus City of Chicago opinion, Kernatz never addressed the issue of whether or not precluding somebody, in this case, telling someone you cannot occupy 1,500 square feet in the city of Markham or 1,500 square feet on the planet is a seizure. The person was free to go wherever they want, and in the Fourth Amendment sense, was that a seizure? Contrary to what plaintiff's counsel says, Kernatz certainly didn't hold that. No U.S. Supreme Court case ever held that being precluded from occupying one small space on a planet was a seizure for Fourth Amendment purposes. And all that's an issue in this case, Your Honor, is not Soldal. Soldal dealt with a seizure of property, and that may have some bearing on the issue that person under those circumstances had some rights in that building. But here we're dealing with the seizure of the person.
You got more time to add red lights.
The general formulation in Kernatz, I think, is right. The general formulation. We look at whether or not a seizure is consensual and whether or not a seizure occurred. All the Supreme Court cases either dealt with situations where there was, in fact, a restriction of movement, or they addressed situations like Bostick, whether the contact with the police officer was constitutional or was consensual. In this case, there was the threat to arrest. I think Your Honors perhaps could conclude, or I wouldn't concede, that their leaving the place was not voluntary. But the issue becomes, were they seized when they were simply precluded from remaining in this location? I would suggest on the issue of qualified immunity that Spiegel, if anything, dictates that the officer's actions were constitutional. Spiegel said, you know, you were free to go anyplace else other than into this home. If an officer reading Spiegel, an officer could clearly read Spiegel and would not clearly conclude that by precluding someone from remaining here, they would seize them, and the word is seizure for Fourth Amendment purposes. I believe my co-counsel is going to use the additional time. If there's no further questions, I'll stop at this time.
You're through then, all right.
I'm through, Your Honor, yes.
Right. Come right ahead.
I believe the court.
Yes, sir.
As to the state court claim, Your Honors, you see nothing that was argued this morning, really, or in the briefs that have been tendered. Also, as to Ms. Wichter, she did not act with or for Officer Muldrow or the City of Markham or anyone else. She was a private citizen. She did not conspire with anybody. She did not conspire with anybody that had policy-making decisions. Also, as was brought up before, nothing was brought out about any policy in Markham. Officer Muldrow comes on the scene of a domestic disturbance. That's all he knows about. He does not look at this as a landlord-tenant situation. When he gets there, without belaboring it again, there's a mess there. There's screaming going on, swearing going on. There are people that are even in another room, as you saw in the brief. There was an emergency situation. He did what he thought was best in the time that he had to defuse what could have been a very volatile situation. Again, as to Ms. Wichter, nothing to show that she was part of anything that was done by the officers. All she did was relate to the officer her side of the situation when she was questioned.
Thank you. All right, counsel. I think your time is up.
Oh, I thought I had about 30 seconds. No? Okay.
Go ahead. Take 30 seconds.
Okay.
It's on the house.
Well, I appreciate that. All I would point out is the bulk of this argument has to do with the facts. And all we are asking here is that we put those facts in front of a jury, and then we have a jury decide whether it was reasonable for this officer to force my clients out of their home. Thank you, Judge.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
We will proceed to case number